ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It is a truth universally acknowledged that on one's 250th birthday, there should be a celebration. I'm Claire Nichols, and on The Book Show, we're raising our teacups to Jane Austen.
Why Austen? What is it about her?
Authors Colm Tobin, Karen Joy Fowler, and more will explore why, in 2025, the Austen effect is bigger than ever.
That's quite incredible.
Search for The Book Show and look for Dear Jane wherever you get your podcasts, or hear it now on the ABC Listen app.
With summer just around the corner, we're being warned of record heat across the nation.
That's the official word from the Bureau of Meteorology, which, even back in October, said that we're in for a warmer than usual summer this year. So how do meteorologists make these predictions so far out? And what impact is our changing climate having on these long-range forecasts? Hi, I'm Belinda Smith, and you're listening to Lab Notes, the ABC Radio National show that dissects the science behind new discoveries and current events. To tell us how long-range forecasts are made without the use of a crystal ball is Carl Braganza, National Manager of Climate Services at the Bureau of Meteorology. What does a long-range summer forecast look like?
So what we're looking at over summer is a number of interesting things on the climate side. We have elevated sea surface temperatures around most of Australia at the moment, and that's forecast to continue. A lot of the predictability that we have at long range, so beyond the week, actually comes from the ocean state. So the oceans don't change as quickly as the atmosphere does. It doesn't change from one day to the next the way the weather does. So there's some persistence in the ocean that gives us some predictability. And what we're seeing over summer associated with those sea surface temperature patterns is a higher chance of above average rainfall in parts of the east of the continent and a higher chance of lower than average rainfall in the western parts of the continent.
On the rainfall map, this looks like green and blue blobs kind of scattered all over the continent. But
there are a lot of the parts of the map that are white. So what does that mean? It means that the sea surface temperatures out there aren't particularly favouring wet or dry conditions. So it's a reasonably neutral forecast compared to some that we've seen. So going into, say, the 2019 summer, you're really seeing an already parched and dry landscape and not much hope of rainfall in the next couple of months leading into summer. So that's not the sort of situation we're seeing at the moment. It's a little bit more benign. But having said that, we've seen each summer some of the individual extreme events like Tropical Cyclone Jasper or some of the storms we've seen can be quite impactful. And some of the drying episodes that we've seen can be quite impactful as well. And that's the added risk that climate change is giving us in terms of what's on the horizon.
We'll talk about that in a second. But just when it comes to talking about long-range weather forecasts, how long-range can you be?
So, yeah, typically we break up forecasts into what's called lead time. So that's how much away from the present that forecast is relevant for. So a lead time of one day is the forecast for the next day. Lead times of 7 to 10 days are what we call numerical weather prediction, or NWP.
Like the forecast you might catch on the news.
And then once you go beyond that, you go into what's sometimes called extended prediction. So that's the next 30 days. And then long range is typically the next 90 days. You're really starting to push predictability as you get further out in time. But there's still some information in that, otherwise we wouldn't release the service at all. And some of that information, suitably formulated, so probabilistically, is of useful to people, particularly if they have to manage climate risk. So if they're managing risks to do with what weather might occur in the next 3 months, then we're finding that it is useful.
So like farmers, or who uses these long-range forecasts?
Generally immediately think farmer.
Yeah.
And I guess that's natural, particularly in Australia, where our national narrative around rural Australia and the importance of that culture and the farming culture means that we do have a strong focus on serving the farming community with long-range forecasts. Some of the biggest users are actually the finance sector, who have to make decisions over the next 3 months. Some of those decisions are related to primary production, obviously, so they tend to be hedging their bets rather more than some individual operators. But pretty much all sectors, financial services sector in particular, so insurance, but construction, Some construction projects have a long tail or timeline associated with them. They might be in parts of the country where they're persisting through the wet season, for example, and they have to build. So those things are also aided by the long-range forecast. But generally, if you have to manage climate risk of some sort, and once you start looking for examples, you see them all over the place.
So it's not just people like me looking at it and thinking, oh, what's the Boxing Day test going to be like this year?
There's that as well. There's people planning their holidays and things like that. Sometimes we tell those people that just the climate averages is probably what you should be looking at.
What kind of data is used or fed into making these long-range forecasts?
Yeah, so I'll take you through a bit of the history of that. So once upon a time, what we found looking at Australian rainfall and temperature was that it was very responsive to broad-scale patterns of sea surface temperatures in our region. And people came to understand that as El Niño or La Niña, and in the Indian Ocean, the positive or negative Indian Ocean dipole.
These climate phenomena are related to the movement of warm water in the Pacific and Indian Oceans.
So if you take the Pacific Ocean, where there's the classic ENSO, El Niño Southern Oscillation, so the flip between El Niño and La Niña is really instructive on how that influences our rainfalls.
During a La Niña event, trade winds push warm water to the north of Australia. That warm water pumps heaps of moisture into the atmosphere.
And you get a lot of rainfall over the Australian region during a La Niña event. During El Niño, the opposite happens. So you get cooler water in the Australian region, the warm water is dragged off to the central and eastern Pacific, and the rainfall follows that. And you tend to get drought or drying conditions in Australia. So that's one mode of sea surface temperature pattern. There's more than one.
Around 50 years ago, people realised that certain sea surface temperature patterns were followed by, say, a particularly dry year in Australia.
In the 70s, scientists were starting to discover that, hey, Australia actually has some predictability at long timescales due to these really interesting modes of variability in the ocean that can have an 18-month to 12-month cycle associated with them.
And presto, long-range forecasting became possible.
So initially, the forecasts were based off sea surface temperature recordings themselves. So looking at the historical patterns, relating those to Australian rainfall, and then looking at current conditions and saying, well, how much of the historical patterns can we see in the current conditions in order to provide some sort of a rainfall forecast? As the climate system has continued to change due to climate change, those historical models, which are statistical, tended to not work as well. So what we've moved to is essentially a long-range weather forecast. So this operates the same way as numerical weather prediction. It's absorbing all of the data we can off the Earth system. So it's all of the deep ocean data that we collect through the ocean buoys, sea surface temperature data, all of the atmospheric data we collect from terrestrial instruments and from satellites. So that all goes into the model, and it just uses physics the same way that a weather model does. But it's incorporating some of the slower physics in the way it does its predictions.
You touched on uncertainty before. How accurate are long-range forecasts, and has the accuracy changed over time?
So the accuracy has increased over time. So when we look at our model and we benchmark its performance, what you benchmark a long-range forecast against is basically the climate average.
And the accuracy of a long-range forecast isn't the same every year. For instance,
when we do have a developing El Niño event, we get more predictability that year, because once the ocean starts moving in that direction, it's like a big flywheel. It doesn't just turn around and stop.
Are there new technologies or new data sources even that will help increase accuracy or decrease uncertainty when it comes to sort of long-range forecasts?
There will be a predictability limit on long-range forecasts just because chaos starts to impact on the system. New technology, new computing, more computing power, machine learning may give us some boost in accuracy, but I actually think there's a lot of improvement to be made in the way we use the seasonal forecast, in the way we actually apply it to the risk that we manage. And because it's not got the history of use as a weather forecast, it takes some time to get even an individual user good at using it. A good analogy for that is the weather forecast is quite passive. If I go to Tokyo tomorrow and I open up my phone and it says it's going to rain 13 millimetres and be 17 degrees, I know exactly what that means. If I go to California and I look at a long-range forecast for Californian rainfall, I actually need to know a bit about Californian rainfall to interpret that forecast. And so that's why over the past 20 years we've put a little bit of effort into, for example, farming communities, finance sector and others, to understand how to use the forecast a little bit more, because you do need a bit of a skill set to interpret it well.
What about climate change? How will that potentially affect these long-range weather forecasts?
Yeah, so per se, if you're just looking at the physics, it shouldn't affect it that much. So the physics doesn't change in a warmer world. It's the same physics. there's a potential that you get more extreme events, and by their very nature, extreme events are harder to predict. So it's not necessarily climate change making the physics more difficult. It just means that the nature of the events that you are seeing, maybe they don't have a historical precedence associated with them, and maybe they're record-breaking in some way, which means that the uncertainty around an extreme event is a little bit larger.
On extreme events, I was interested to see the long-range cyclone forecast has been retired by the BOM. Why is that?
Yeah, so the tropical cyclone forecast, we're generally going for a rough number of how many tropical cyclones might we expect this season. And there's a clear historical relationship between during periods such as La Niña events, where we have a lot of warm water around Australia, you tend to have more cyclones form and you'll have more make landfall. And the opposite's true for periods where we have quite cool water around Australia. You just suppress the generation of cyclones and fewer of them actually make it to the coast. What we've found, though, is the historical model that that's built upon, the sea surface temperatures have changed so much that it's not reliable anymore. And what we're also finding is there's a trend towards fewer tropical cyclones in our region, so the older climatologies don't work. And there's potentially a trend towards a higher proportion of the tropical cyclones that we do see being more severe, particularly by wind speed and the amount of rainfall that they can generate. So we switched our advice around to something that was, if I was talking to a member of community, what would I actually tell them? I wouldn't go for a number of how many tropical cyclones there are, because you only need one to ruin your summer. I'm very clear that the season is from kind of November through to April, but we have seen a potential extension of those seasons, particularly at the latter part of the season. And one of the biggest things to emphasise is that the ones that do form can potentially have a lot more energy available to them because of the underlying sea surface temperatures. And if the atmosphere is warmer, then it can rain more.
As we have more extremes, do you think people will be more invested in these long-range forecasts?
I think there will be more interest in long-range forecasts. There's also probably going to be more interest in just your climate risk in general as well. So understanding what your current risk is and how that risk is changing. There's surprisingly little data on that amongst people out there that hold the risks, and not the climatologists and the meteorologists, those that have things that are vulnerable to climate. There's a lot of work to do there in actually understanding what our vulnerability and exposure is. And as you get more information on that, you tend to find that perhaps then the long-range forecast and the climate information is more useful to them because they actually understand what they're sensitive to. It's a little bit like some sectors have a very clear understanding for that. If you think of the national electricity market, it's an electricity grid that runs the length of the continent from north to south. It's got a whole bunch of generation and distribution and assets and transmission assets associated with it. It's very sensitive to the weather. So you'll find that the operators of those systems actually know their exposure really well. Same for, you know, a really high-end wine grower or a really high-end merino wool producer, where there's really fine margins on their product or there's a lot of money associated with variations in the weather, then those people understand their exposure quite well and already use these products. Other sectors don't understand their exposure so much at the moment. But as climate is changing, they might have reason to look at that.
That was Carl Braganza, National Manager of Climate Services at the Bureau of Meteorology. And thank you for listening to Lab Notes on ABC Radio National, where every week we dissect the science behind new discoveries and current events. I'm Belinda Smith. This episode was produced on the lands of the Wurundjeri and Tungurung people. Rebecca McLaren's the producer, and it was mixed by Ross Richardson. Catch you next week.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.